Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, joined alongside me for now at least.
Yeah.
Whitney Wright.
Yeah, today is my last in-person podcast episode, but if I come back and visit, then of course I would.
I like to never say never. So
yeah, exactly.
It will certainly miss you sitting right next to me, but you know, we've got some contingencies in place, and I'm sure our listeners, so if you're like, oh no, Whitney's my favorite, like, what can we do to keep Whitney there? She wants to leave, so don't capture her and try to force her to stay here. That's what I'm gonna do. But
I'll still be around.
Yeah, I think this is the thing that I think is exciting about being in this publishing space is that, you know, probably 10 years ago to do anything remote or not in person, like video production or audio wise,
quality was so bad.
Yeah, it's like you had to jump through so many hoops. I remember trying to record a television phone call with someone while we were both recording with our own independent recording equipment. And we were clapping and stuff like that in the room to try to sync it up. And it never quite works out the way that you hope that it will.
No, I'm hoping, and Manny's very good. He's told me all the things I need to get and how to set it up. So we should be, you know, should be no like any hitch in the system here.
Yeah. And if it goes well, we'll share with you exactly the tools and the system and stuff like that we use to do it, because I think, you know, obviously we probably have a number of publishers here that have their own podcast or video. And, you know, I think this also opens up the opportunity for us to potentially do some guests down the road.
Definitely.
We had some guests in our first iterations of the podcast, and those were always very popular. But so far we've done a good job of, you know, getting our audience back since we relaunched the podcast.
Yeah.
And so we'll venture out into guests here soon, but so far it seems like, you know, everybody keeps digging the content that we've got, so
Whitney. We'll keep at it. Well, let's get into it then. So we got some stuff from Meta. They had a bit of a trouble with their ad spending. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And then we have generative AI is coming to Google Ads. And then Google drops mobile-friendly page speed, secure sites, and page experience as retired ranking systems. So a couple of Google things. Yeah, I know. It was like kind of some interesting news this time around. So we'll get into Meta quickly. It's not anything crazy. It's basically they had a bugger error in their ad system, which caused campaigns to overspend by more than double their daily spending cap during the middle of the night on Sunday. And it mostly occurred on Facebook via the Audience Network and a small amount on Instagram. Some brands only lost a couple hundred, but like bigger brands, some of them lost like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so this is kind of in a series of platform bugs for Meta this last year or so. Advertisers still haven't heard really anything from Meta.
Yeah.
They got an email, but like.
Yeah, it's a classic Southwest Airlines situation in my opinion, where it's like one of those things where they're like, we're going to make it right. And then you never hear from them. They're like, we were hoping you forgot that we were going to make it right.
Yeah.
But I think with the Meta thing and the spending, you know, this is kind of a rookie mistake, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners like have worked in a development environment or something like that before. But you don't push stuff new on the weekends. Because it's a perfect formula to have to come in on a Saturday morning and figure out like why.
Half the
sites are down or something.
Yeah, at least this article from AdExchanger, they said that with the Meta layoffs, you know, over 10,000 people, it could cause some customer service issues, because a lot of people were in account services and technical platform operations. So they let go everyone that could help, basically, and everyone's calling in and asking what to do. And
that's a very real thing. And I think these big tech platforms, I think that this is gonna, the chickens will come home to roost eventually on this, because. I'm going to use this as my own personal soapbox. I still can't get into my Twitter account. It automatically added 2FA because I added my phone number to our company account. And one of the problems with that is that they got rid of two-factor authentication via telephone number. So now I don't. It just says use your generator app, and I have never used it, so I can't log into my Twitter account. So if anybody there works for Twitter, I've been trying for weeks, but I can't get somebody from a service. It is impossible to reach a person.
Yeah.
And I've heard before about Meta specifically, when people have gotten accounts lost or locked out, people will literally just try to find local area Facebook employees and reach out to them.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's the only way that, you know, internally somebody will do them a favor or something.
Huh.
But yeah,
that's unfortunate.
The lack of support on a lot of these things. You know, they say it's a free platform, but you know, those terms and conditions, you know, it's built a pretty successful business.
Yeah, right. They did send an email, like I said, to CEOs that they can expect refunds, just not for the entire spend. So, which kind of makes sense, but also like, who's to say what they would have wanted to spend or what they would have spent and like what they wouldn't have spent.
I think you'd need to, I mean, like, hopefully their tracking and a lot of their estimations on the audience and stuff like that was accurate. And in which case, it's the audience that you meant to buy anyways. But I think if there's one thing we know about Meta, it's that you can't trust their data. So it's going to get audited 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They kind of estimated with all the different like advertisers that are on Meta and that this happened to, and they said the refund package could be like over hundreds of millions of dollars, which makes sense for some of these bigger brands that, you know, spent double what they meant to. What do you think this does for like the credibility of Meta?
I mean, it really hurts them because if you think about it, a couple years ago, we always talked about in advertising the duopoly, right? Like this idea that Google and Facebook like ate the world's ad inventory up, and like you know, these two parties were the behemoths like in competition with each other, and Apple was going to cut them off, and Amazon was the little engine that could. But you know, that narrative is so gone now from the standpoint of like Meta's advertising business isn't in shambles. They have a great product and they still have like really good reach. The problem is that you have these new entries to the space like TikTok. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even now it's like you can buy things programmatically on Spotify. You can buy it in Netflix. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a fan of Netflix advertising product where they've emphasized the cost being higher, but with a very limited inventory. I think that somebody has to be able to do that because we get ad inflation. The more that you try to just make more inventory available, we see this around the world right now with financial inflation. And this is partially, you know, the result of people like Meta who would inflate even, you know, like they've had to pay these lawsuits where they've inflated the number of views and stuff like that. So then you have advertisers that have literally their compensation plans based on them getting maybe even like a certain cost per video views. Mm-hmm. And those metrics are very arbitrary. And and I think now you're looking at something where it's like a declining in popularity platform, an ad product that's not trustworthy. And at a time whenever people's budgets are pretty tight, especially from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
I think this hurts them.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see where that ends up going. As this was posted this morning, so they still haven't said anything, and it was Sunday night at around midnight, so you know, like right in the middle of the night or whatever. So we'll see what Meta does. We have some generative AI coming soon to Google Ads. This is from Search Engine Land. It's based on an internal presentation for advertisers. This article is Google is planning to use AI to generate unique ads using materials provided by human marketers. So it will be gathering from humans. The new technology will be integrated into Performance Max.
Then what do you need AI for?
I know, exactly.
Human-powered AI.
Yeah. Google's program that uses Performance Max is Google's program that uses an algorithm to determine ad placement, budget allocation, stuff like that. So how it would work is advertisers can submit creative content, such as images, videos, etc. And the AI will remix these materials to generate ads that target specific audiences and meet more objectives. The concerns are about spreading a misinformation. If AI is optimized to convert new customers, it may not always be truthful, which we know as hallucinations. And AI generative ads offers a lot of potential, including an improved conversion rate and more effective marketing strategies. So this is kind of something that I didn't really see coming is AI with ads, but it kind of makes sense.
Well, you know, I think 3 or 4 years ago, whenever people thought about AI as being this, you know, like this thing that would come at some point and it would replace a certain portion of like just office jobs, we'll put it that way. It's because I think in a lot of ways you could use the broad term white collar, but I still think that there's a modern sort of like blue collar job too. You think about like call centers and things like that. And, you know, that was who AI was going to come get is those, you know, lower skilled kind of like modern workforce jobs. But what we didn't think was that AI would come for creative jobs.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the one that's going to be here. And I think we've learned almost really in the last 6 months, like AI is can be creative.
Yeah.
And maybe people are less creative than we thought.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of things with AI that I noticed to where it's like, you know, the behavior of humans is far more predictable than what I think we, you know, almost want to admit to ourselves.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I see things like this cropping up in a lot of places. But, you know, if you kind of read the elements there of how they're going to do this, it's funny, but I don't think you need AI for that. There's a lot of things that I've seen here recently where it's like, and we're going to use AI to do this. And it's like, well, that's fine. But like,
Did you need to?
Yeah, it's kind of like using a sword to open up a Christmas present.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it can do that, but like, you don't need a sword.
Right.
Great example, by the way.
Yeah.
You know me and my examples. But yeah, I mean, it kind of strikes me as one of those things to where it's like, ads are sort of one of those things that you can get as creative as you want to be, but there's kind of a formula there where it's like, mm-hmm. you try these 10 beginnings, you've got to include this. What rules do you have around what can't you include? Mm-hmm. And you only get so many combinations.
Right. Yeah, I think that the biggest issue with this would be if it tried to get around things to convert new customers.
And we know it'll do that.
And yeah, we already know that it's trying to do that. So I think that'll be the big issue with this is ads that spread misinformation.
And that's going to be Google's problem too, because yeah. if it circumvents Google's system, and it is Google's system, meaning you have a copyrighted brand name that's not supposed to be used in an ad, and it mm-hmm. just uses it anyways.
Right.
They'll say they have safeguards in place, but if you really do use AI, it can make a like cognitive, if that's the right term, choice to ignore that, which mm-hmm. we learned early on with Ezoic when we started doing ad testing yeah. and stuff like that. It would cheat, and our early prototypes, it would like cheat, and we couldn't figure out why. And it's like, well, the weight and the emphasis was placed on the goal more so right. than the rules.
Right.
And so yeah, there's a lot to work out there.
Yeah. I think that they didn't really say when this is coming, how far along it is. We talked last week that Google's really, you know, hunkering down on AI right now. They're really focused on it. So I think that, them bringing AI to ads isn't completely surprising. But I do think I don't really see it lasting or like really, I don't know. It seems like a kind of a cool product, but like why?
Yeah. To me, this is a feature.
And, yeah.
I mean, man, Google, oh, how the mighty have fallen. And they report their earnings today. I'm interested to see how they did in Q4 mm-hmm. Or Q1. I have a feeling it just based on the ad revenue index, they're going to probably see one of the worst quarters that they've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
But that being said, I look at this and I'm like, this is another rookie mistake here. I mean, like Facebook, Google, what's going on over there? Because this is a feature. This is not worth the fanfare that I think I saw this in a couple places.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of begs of desperation. They want credit for doing AI stuff. And this is, you know, a feature to an existing product that, like, had they rolled this out like a year ago with, you know, no mention of AI, people would be like, cool.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's kind of like, where can we slap AI on literally everything?
Yeah, I think that's coming everywhere.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Tyler Bishop, the CMO at Ezoic. And if you haven't already, I want to invite you to try Ezoic Ads, the first and only platform built for testing on publisher websites so that you can actually ensure that your ad inventory, the ad space available on your site, is getting the maximum value from advertisers. We do this by taking all the world's most popular ad networks and exchanges, bundling them together, and then making them compete on your site. And we adjust what those layouts look for every visitor based on machine learning. This means that supply and demand finally have a dynamic principle that allows publishers to have the same advantage that advertisers have. And that's what makes Ezoic unique. And I hope you'll give it a shot this year, especially in this current environment where I think the value of something like Ezoic is stronger than ever before. And you can give it a try at www.ezoic.com.
So Google also did something else this last week. They dropped mobile-friendly page speed, secure sites, and page experience as retired ranking systems. So what does this mean for the page experience update? Google kind of release a little bit of what they had in mind with this. It was more of a concept to describe a set of key page experience aspects for site owners to focus on. It was never a separate ranking system. And then John Mueller of Google, who we all know, said, "We've seen people hyper-focus on these numbers and it's not good use of time and energy." And we've talked about this.
Oh my God. This is the most frustrating thing for me, because I mean, you probably know more so than our listeners. Our listeners have probably caught one or two diatribes of mine on this.
Yeah.
But, boy, it's very frustrating. And it's kind of like disingenuous too for them to parrot the thing that is a fact, which is, I see the quote that you have here. We've seen people hyper focus on these numbers and it's not a good use of time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Said this podcast, like on every episode, like, you know, back in the day. And I think it's very frustrating because if you look at it, Google, the entire focus of speed, for our listeners that maybe haven't heard this before, I'll give you a little inside baseball. The reason why speed became an emphasis at Google to begin with was because probably about, maybe it was around 2012, 2013, all the investments were going into apps. So like a lot of venture capital was going into apps in the app store. And, you know, there was this big movement towards like, well, what will happen with the open web? Like, people just access like information, everything that they need through apps. Like, you won't go to websites anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Pish posh, no way.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think we learned was that like that's not necessarily true. You know, the top 100 apps I think gross majority of all the app revenue. You know, like, and I think with Google, they kept on that speed wagon partially because it allowed them to penetrate internet connectivity and become incumbent in new developing markets, like in the third world, where you have, you know, somebody that maybe to just download an app or to visit a website, like it might cost them $1 or something like that.
And take a really long time.
Yeah, for the data costs and all that kind of stuff. So they were trying to, and they kind of hoped AMP would take off for that reason, and it didn't for obvious reasons. But I think what we're learning now is that Google sort of sees that effort as like, well, that's not our threat anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So like, we can't afford the resources, the time, the energy to put people behind this anymore to maintain this complex, overly complex thing that they've made. And they put a score on it. First mistake, because you give something a number and everything else is a mystery. Guess what? The one thing that they're going to hyper focus on is the one thing you gave them a number for.
Right. Yeah. This is from Search Engine Roundtable, and they postured this question. Were these ghost algorithms that did nothing but convince us to take these usability and security changes seriously? What do you think?
I mean, so my belief on this is that I've never seen a study that showed a correlation between page speed and rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually somebody making a change and it having a like just even a like comparable impact. So you have a page speed score of 79. What happens if it goes to 85? Do you move up in the rankings? It doesn't really make sense like as an arbitrary value on its own, because the content is going to overwhelmingly matter more. So if I search for like how much do hippopotamuses weigh on average, and you give me how much giraffes weigh on average just because it's faster, like that's not better.
Right.
And Google's very concerned about like the quality of the product. They think it's what differentiates them. So I look at it and, you know, even when they did roll it out, they combined it with like three other things that are probably more important. It's probably more important for you to have a secure HTTPS site with canonicals than it is for the like you want the page to load. But like, you know, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds, like, if the information is what you want, people wait. And yeah, mobile friendly, which, hello, 2016, I think.
Yeah, right. We've been talking about this for a long time.
So it's the least important things that they rolled together in this little thing is like this little carrot. And yet I would say people, they focus on it as if it's a top three important thing for your website. And it's just not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about this on the podcast so many times, but I just thought it was interesting after all these years, they're finally like, we're done with it. Like,
And it's gotta be frustrating, I think, as a publisher too, because, I think there was this kind of hyper-focus on it, almost like a mania. Because if you really think about it, it's like before Google had ever said anything about it, this was a vanity metric for like developers that were trying to one up each other in forums, where it'd be like, oh, mine's this fast. Oh, well, technically you load this way, so mine actually loads total time faster.
Yeah.
It's like nobody cared.
Yeah.
But once Google started talking about it, it added this huge layer of technology costs, resources, energy, considerations, and you know how many publishers rebuilt their websites because they needed it to be faster, or hired somebody, or currently paying a 1-year annual subscription on some technology that they are like frustrated to have to manage.
Right.
Yeah, I feel for publishers here, and I think
I do. Yeah,
it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I would pay really close attention to what Google says, what they do, and then what makes sense towards their objectives.
Yeah.
Because I think you can always get a pretty good gauge of where they're going to go with something based on what their incentives are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Was there anything else? I didn't see anything else about this. Was there anything else that you saw about this that...
No, actually, I'm partially learning about it on this podcast with you.
Oh, okay,
I know
cool.
You said that it dropped here recently. I had heard from their team there that they were going to be sunsetting a lot of their... the efforts that they'd put into Search Console, just because it's a like people thing where it's like, you know, do we really need to dedicate, you know, a team of people to, you know, maintaining our, you know, the backlinks checker inside of Search Console.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're actually going to see a stripped out version of Search Console coming here in the future, probably because stuff starts getting buggy and they just start lopping it off.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Well, that's all that we have for this episode of the Publisher Lab. If you would like to watch us on YouTube, we have a YouTube channel, and we have a playlist for the Publisher Lab. You can go to justpublisherlab.org and find all of the episodes on there. You can also leave us a comment or a suggestion, a topic suggestion.
Topics, guests.
Whatever you would like us to talk about, we'll consider it. We've taken some of your suggestions already. So make sure if you have something to say that you reach out to us. You can leave us a comment on YouTube. And I think that's it, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
And we'll all see you soon.
Yeah.
They'll see you pretty much the same.
Yeah,
as they are used to seeing you now.
Yeah, which is...
I will see you differently.
Yeah, exactly.
And it will make me sad. But it will make me happy that I get to have a chance to chat with you a little bit.
Exactly.
As you traverse across... Did we tell people where you were going?
I don't think so. I'm going to Indiana, but then I'm going to New York.
Yeah, we can cut that out if you don't want all the listeners to know where you're going to be.
New York's a pretty big place. Yeah. It'll be fine. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Publisher Lab.